The winner is.
Well, it's not like it's in your luggage.
Sometimes. That means sometimes.
There can be 100 people in a room. Maybe there is right now.
I know it's tuna, but it says chicken.
I don't know her.
She always has these long lists of like diva demands.
Cheetos and Doritos.
Great gowns, beautiful gowns.
I understand you embrace the term diva.
Yeah. Hello, divas.
Hello, and welcome back to another Diva Dailies podcast episode. I am your co-host, Steffi, and this is...
I'm Lisa.
And I'm so excited for today's episode. But first, don't forget to follow us on Instagram and Twitter. It's Diva Dailies Pod. And then if you have any thoughts or concerns, you can always email us at divadailiespod@gmail.com. And don't forget to rate and review and subscribe on whatever you're listening to. And as always, we're going to be referencing a bunch of articles and videos along the way. So if you want to kind of look at what we've been looking at, you can look at the show notes and they should be there. So here we go. Let's get into it. Our Oscar and Razzie moments of the week. This is a segment of the podcast where we talk about our personal high point and low point moments of the week.
I guess I'll start with my Razzie moment of the week, actually, because it's so disturbing that I just feel like I don't want to end on that note.
Oh my gosh, I'm scared.
Did you hear the thing about in a Starbucks in New York? Then this lady found, like, essentially a dead mouse in her drink.
No.
Yeah, it was, like, at the bottom of her drink. Because the picture, which I really wish I wouldn't have looked at the picture, looks like it's kind of been sitting there for a while. And so it's unclear if she just put a dead mouse in it and was like, look at what Starbucks did, you know? But either way, it was disturbing, to say the least.
Ew, that is so disgusting.
Yeah, and so I haven't been to Starbucks in a while. So in one way, then maybe that's a good thing because... I'm saving money.
Yeah.
But I can't tell you how frustrating it is because I love their mobile ordering system. And so, like, a lot of times if I'm running late, then I'll just mobile order. And that's, like, how I have breakfast in the morning.
Uh-huh.
And so it's so frustrating when I'm like, if I'm running late now, my brain can't say, like, we're going to have Starbucks. And so I just start my day without coffee or food. And it's awful. And I'm like, fuck that mouse.
You know what that story kind of reminds me of is, remember back in the day when there was that story that came out when a lady found a finger,
yeah,
in her like Wendy's food or something? Yeah. Kind of reminds me of that.
I totally agree.
Would you rather find a finger or a rat?
I would rather find neither. Like, there's not even...
Well, that's the
goal. I can't even give you an answer to that because I can't wrap my brain around it. It, like, makes me sick thinking about it.
Yeah.
But my Oscar moment of the week...
Yes.
It's kind of non-specific, but I've just been getting kind of excited about Christmas time movies coming out. Like, not specifically Christmas movies.
Uh-huh.
Not even, like, award movies, really, but...
Like, holiday movies.
Yeah, because it's, like, a time that people are more likely to go to the theaters.
Right.
So they save the good movies for the end of the year. Mm-hmm. So I'm excited to see Last Holiday with Khaleesi.
Oh my god, I'm so excited for that movie too, because also Henry Golding is in it. When this episode comes out, it's probably going to be January, and we're pre-recording all of our episodes essentially, so that's why we're talking about holiday movies. Just so you're not like, why is she excited about a holiday movie in January? Lisa enjoys an early start to Christmas.
Oh, yes. Very early start.
All right. Well, my Razzie moment of the week is a couple days ago, it was Halloween. How did you celebrate Halloween, by the way?
Oh, I got to go to Disney.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm so happy for you. Did you do their Mickey's party or something?
No, I didn't.
You didn't do that? Oh, you just went. Well, that's nice that you got to, like, see Disney during the holiday season because their decorations are cute. So that's how you spent your Halloween.
Mm-hmm.
That's cool. Well, this is my Razzie moment of the week in that I was very excited to pass out candy to the kids on Halloween, and no kids showed up.
Oh my gosh.
I don't know. Like, a asterisk mark on that is we have neighbors and there's toddler twins and they're really cute. They're like 3 years old. So I was like, yes, I'm excited for the toddlers to come because I saw them earlier in the day. But then my mom and I like left to do some errands, like get candy and whatnot. And then when we came back, my dad was like, oh, they already came by.
Yeah, I was going to say a lot of little kids, they trick-or-treat early, like sometimes at like 3 in the afternoon.
3 in the afternoon?
Yeah. I remember that, like even just growing up, like the little kids go super early.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
3 in the afternoon.
Yeah, they go when it's light out and like afternoon.
Damn, that's crazy. Well, the twins were the only kids that stopped by our door. And then I, of course, wasn't home yet. And then when I got home, my dad was like, oh, the twins already came by. So I was like, damn it, I really wanted to give candy to the twins at least. And then no other kids showed up. And it was just really sad. Well, and then my literal Oscar moment of the week is that because we're covering Dreamgirls today, that it gave me a viable excuse to watch Dreamgirls and listen to the soundtrack. Like, I've been in Dreamgirls mode for the past couple days, to the point where when I even went to the gym, I literally listened to the soundtrack from beginning to end. No skips. Well, actually, there was one skip, but I even listened to the ballads while on the treadmill. Oh, that's gosh. How much I enjoyed this process.
I could never. Hats off to you. But that leads us into, they don't even know what we're...
Well, I mean, I would assume from...
They can read?
No, well, I mean, like, I would assume, like...
That's an
like...
assumption you can't make about people these days.
Oh my God, have you ever heard that rumor that Lea Michele doesn't know how to read?
Yeah. I was going to say, what if Lea Michele's a listener? Poor thing doesn't know what we're talking about today.
Oh my gosh. Lea, someone help her.
She's like, duh...
Lea.
Da Riam. Grills. Da Riam.
Da Riam Grills.
Sorry, Lea.
And now, our feature presentation.
Y'all gonna stay here and open your own act?
Did you say our own act?
Effie, Dina's gonna sing lead.
What do you mean? I always sing lead.
Today we're talking about Dreamgirls.
Be a dream girl.
Ow! Change. I'm talking change.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I promise you I was gonna make you a star, right?
We'll always care.
You can't have it all, baby.
Adapted from the 1981 Broadway musical drama of the same name, Dreamgirls follows the evolution of R&B music in the 1960s and 70s through the eyes of a girl group called Dina and the Dreams. This movie was released on December 25th, 2006.
Well, this movie stars Beyoncé, of course, Jennifer Hudson, of course, and Anika Noni Rose as our third dream girl.
Which also, I think that is the coolest name.
Yeah.
I just want to hear someone say that name on loop.
Also, I just feel like Anika Noni Rose is so underrated in this movie. Just putting it out there. But this movie also stars Jamie Foxx, Eddie Murphy, Keith Robinson, and Danny Glover. And there's a special cameo appearance by one Miss Loretta Devine, who plays the jazz singer, and she sings this song called I Miss You, Old Friend. And the reason why we're giving a little shout out to Loretta Devine is because she was actually the original Laurel in the Broadway musical Dreamgirls back in 1981. Yeah.
That's cute. Fun facts.
Mm-hmm. This movie was directed by Bill Condon, and he also wrote the screenplay. And he also, most notably, wrote the screenplay for Chicago, which came out a couple years before Dreamgirls.
Oh.
Mm-hmm.
That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, there's a lot of things when I was doing research that I was like, wow.
Checks out.
Yeah, makes sense. All right. Well, Lisa, I have a question for you.
What?
How excited were you for this movie back in 2006? We were in 7th grade, 13 years old.
Oh my gosh. This is a disclaimer so people don't come for me. I think it's better for me to just be upfront.
Okay.
I am not the hugest fan of movie musicals that have no dialogue because I tend to zone out.
Okay.
And that's exactly what I did in 2006.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what I did recently. But in 2006, it was right after Christmas. I got a sidekick for Christmas.
Oh, 13-year-old me is like jealous of you for having a sidekick.
I was jealous of me. I was like,
I wanted a sidekick so bad, but the sidekick was with T-Mobile and we had Verizon.
Luckily, I was a T-Mobile gal and I got that sidekick and I was like, no one, Lisa, should have all this power. Like, Oh my gosh.
I thought it was like so cool how you like press flip the button it. And would like flip.
Well, that eventually became the death of it. Oh. But
you flipped a little too hard.
Yeah, I flipped a little too hard and its head came off. Oh, no. But we saw it at the mall. And before we went to see the movie, we went to Claire's. And I got a bunch of rhinestones. So I spent the whole movie rhinestoning my sidekick.
In the dark?
Yeah.
Wow, that's talent.
Well, because it's a very bright movie and we're sitting pretty close.
You were using the sparklers from every time they would perform at the very end. You know, there's like always explosions.
Yeah, yeah.
Rhinestoning moment. I was like, rhinestone.
Every time I watch this movie, but it's not this movie in particular. It's any like
movie musicals.
Yeah, like, oh my gosh, don't get me started on Into the Woods. I cannot watch that again in my life. I love Les Mis, but mm-hmm. don't make me watch that movie. So for me, an example of a musical that I can watch, which I don't even necessarily love, is like a Mamma Mia, where there's like equal dialogue to performances.
Okay.
I just feel like whenever there's something that's so music heavy, I'd get it if it's like a direct adaptation, but a lot of times they end up taking some songs out and adding new songs, mm-hmm. which I get a lot of people like that. But for me, I'm like, I just feel like I'm watching a movie on fast forward, you know?
Yeah.
Because it just feels like performance to performance to performance and no real character development behind it.
Yeah.
And so whenever something happens, I don't care. And I talked about that in A Star is Born. It's like there's so many points that not enough has happened and I haven't seen enough growth. I've only seen music to where I just like can't root for these characters.
Mm.
And I think it'd be cool to see a musical adaptation that they add a whole lot more story.
Mm-hmm.
Because film's a medium, you can do that.
Yeah.
And so I just, agreed. I don't know why most choose to go like the, no, we're going to add more songs and there's going to be very minimal dialogue.
That's a good point.
So that's my issue with any movie that's a movie musical that's very song heavy is like, I'm going to bedazzle my sidekick during it. Oh, you know what's a great example that it's not an adaptation though is La La Land.
Mm-hmm.
Equal okay. number of, I had a lot of dialogue, a lot of character development, but I also had a lot of music.
Right.
That's something that I can really like focus on and get behind.
Mm-hmm.
But anything that's super music heavy, then I tend to zone out.
It's a bit different with La La Land, but I guess that's what kind of makes it hard for musicals in general, because when you are adapting, especially something so iconic and known as Dreamgirls mm-hmm. to the movie format, people already have their expectations of like, oh, this song needs to be in there.
Right.
This song needs to be in there. But then sometimes it just like doesn't translate as well into the film
yeah.
format, you know?
But that's my disclaimer.
Mm. I want to set the scene for seventh grade me.
Oh, yeah, walking. Yeah.
Okay. So I was very excited to watch Dreamgirls because, well, for a number of reasons. One, Beyonce. I was also very excited about this movie because around like a couple years before, my first subject really that I became engrossed and obsessed with was Michael Jackson. Michael Jackson is
not
quite
Whitney?
Literally no before there was Whitney there was Michael. I would not get to Whitney. I would not get to Whitney without Michael.
That's an interesting first.
Mm-hmm. It's an interesting first, and I think it's an important first because Michael was so all-encompassing. Mm-hmm. He was my entry point into pop culture. Mm-hmm. And when I was
he was your yellow brick road.
He quite literally was the yellow brick road, and like there were so many doors leading to different hallways. I was like, wow, what is this world? And one of the doors was Motown. When I was learning about Michael's growing up and his backstory, he was part of course, like I'm sure a lot of you know this, he was part of a boy band back in the day called the Jackson 5 with his brothers. And the Jackson 5, of course, was signed to Motown. This was the first time I started hearing about people like Diana Ross and the Supremes and Stevie Wonder and Marvin Gaye and the Temptations. So then a couple years later, when I finally got to Dreamgirls, I was like, wow, I know this. Like, this looks familiar to me because I had that knowledge coming in. And then additionally, my best friend in middle school, his name is Colin. Shout out to Colin. We were very excited for Dreamgirls, and we went on our school's computer and we typed in dreamgirls.com because we wanted to see all of these ads for, you know, Dreamgirls. Like, where's the poster of Beyonce? When we typed in dreamgirls.com, the first thing that popped up, the screen went black. And then all of a sudden, like, what faded into the foreground were these women naked. And it was the first time I ever went on a porn site on our Catholic school's computer. And Colin and I quickly like, exited the browser and we were like, oh my God, where's Beyonce?
You're like, oh my gosh, we're gonna get expelled.
Yeah, we were so scared. I was like, oh my god, how do we clear the history?
You're like, get my fingerprints off this keyboard.
But yeah, that's my Dreamgirls story. And how excited I was to the point where I unknowingly stumbled upon my first porn site. So there's that. Dreamgirls.com. I wonder if that's like a defunct website now.
I was gonna say let's Google it, but I think we're good.
All right, well. What's your first scene, Lisa?
My first scene is the opening with the cowbell.
Oh, I love the opening. Oh, I love the opening of this movie. Go ahead.
That was basically it.
That cowbell, though.
Ladies and gentlemen, the Detroit Theater continues our legendary talent contest with the Indie Fatigable Stepsisters.
What I like about that opening sequence too, I guess, is just seeing all the different acts. It's a nice intro into this like world and era of music, like all of that raw talent just wanting to be seen and heard. It was cool. So my first scene that I really want to talk about is their first official performance as the Dreamgirls. They're no longer the Dreamettes because they're grown women now. They're
the Dreams.
The Dreams.
Ladies and gentlemen, the Crystal Room is proud to present the club debut of America's newest recording stars, The Dreams.
Every man has his own special dream, and your dream's just about to come true. Life's not as bad as it may seem if you open your eyes to what's in front of you. We are dreams.
What I really love about this performance is, well, everything. For me, like, I just think this performance is so stunning, and I personally feel like Beyoncé totally embodies the physicality of Diana Ross. I love the luxurious arms. I love the way she like sashays across that stage. Even like the way she moves her head and like angles her head at some points, it's very like Diana Ross-esque. And my favorite part of the performance is when she does those like pedal turns at the very end.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my gosh, that's like glamour to me. I think it's an interesting point in the story itself because while Dina and the girls are performing on stage, they cut to Curtis, played by Jamie Foxx, and he's talking to Dina's mom. And Dina's mom at one point is like,
"Much as I love my daughter, I never thought she had much of a voice."
Dina has something better. She has quality.
You make her sound like a product.
Product. I like that.
Wasn't bedazzling at that point.
Yeah. Young Lisa was like, "Oop." If Diana Ross is the real life equivalent to Dina, the real life equivalent to Curtis would be Berry Gordy, who was the founder of Motown. Originally, when the Supremes were first starting out, Diana wasn't the lead, but then eventually Berry Gordy picked Diana Ross to be the face and lead of the group because she had a distinctive, softer voice and her voice favored pop songs, and they kind of make that connection in Dreamgirls. I thought this scene was interesting because it showed how African-American artists during this era, they had to do this like weird, awkward dance in order to cross over, in order to be quote-unquote quote palatable specifically to white audiences. In general, throughout the movie, the relationship between Dina, who didn't start off as lead but now she is put into this lead position because she quote unquote fulfills the mainstream white audience's expectations of who they want to see in the front in comparison to the Effie character, someone who was like, she's more voluptuous, her voice has soul and grit, where Dina's voice didn't have soul and grit. It's a thin
Dina's
voice,
like mainstream passing.
Yeah, that kind of like touches on colorism a bit too, because like Dina's clearly lighter skin than Effie. And in a way, I felt like that was kind of like a self-reflexive moment for Beyonce as well.
Yeah,
like there's so many self-reflexive moments that like Beyonce specifically as a artist, as a person, has in relation to the character she's playing, which is like interesting in hindsight to look at. Did you know that when Destiny's Child was first starting out, they purposely had Kelly go by Kelly when her real name is Calendria, and Michelle specifically go by Michelle even though her like full real name is Tanitra, but Beyonce got to keep Beyonce?
That's weird.
Yeah.
So they put me on the spot and they was like, your name ain't even Michelle, it's Tanitra.
Why didn't you never use Tanitra?
I was told it was too
together.
But who told you to change your name? I mean, I do it too.
I mean, you worked with Beyonce.
I ain't really Sean. Ethnic, though. That's like, I don't know what.
That's French.
Beyonce's otherworldly.
So who told you to change your name?
We talk about that off the air. Ooh. Oh. And it had been too much, too. Y'all give it up for Beyonce, Calendria, and Tanitra.
Yeah, you guys.
A lot of syllables.
Forgot that's Kelly's real name.
Be a bit much.
So they were even playing the game in the 2000s as well.
That's sad.
Yeah, there's a lot of like sad elements in this movie. Like you really feel for African American artists in general, but especially during this era when they were really among the first to cross over in that way, and like the price they had to pay in order to do that. All right, what's your next scene?
I really like Stepping to the Bad Side so much.
Oh, okay.
Step into the bad side. Gonna take a mean ride.
Smile ahead is gone away. Those that feel are gonna pay.
Step into the bad side today.
I guess my note on it is that it's one of the first things they filmed. And it actually was like a longer kind of whole ensemble dance than what they had, and it was, some of it was cut for the movie.
Oh, but okay. The way it's set up, it's like Curtis and Cece, who's Effie's brother in the movie, and then like this other henchman guy of Curtis. They're wheeling and dealing, trying to get more money and trying to pay these record labels to play the records of the Dreams and all the other artists signed to Rainbow Records at the time. But I love when like it transitions from them singing to like Jimmy Early and the girls singing.
Yeah.
When it's like, step into the bed. I like that part. It's fun.
I like the Jamie Foxx part when they're in like that room and then all the guys come out and start dancing. But also this part like took me, I didn't understand what was happening until the third watch, when he goes in and then like he's gambling and all of a sudden he's betting on wrestling and then he cashes out and then they're walking away with their briefcase.
Oh, right.
And I get that they're doing it to like get the cash, but I was like, where is this place? Like, are you just going out and like doing bad things, you know?
Yeah.
Like where do they have this all inclusive? It's like an underground Vegas.
Literally. I feel like there's probably some sort of tunnel that they like go down through, and then it's like Vegas.
I know.
Sometimes I feel like I don't know how to articulate this. It's like easier for us to judge what other people had to do back then, you know? Mm-hmm. Like we can say, oh God, I can't believe you did that and that in order to,
because we're sitting X. like on this side of history.
Right. Yeah. And we're like, but
we have the gift of reflection.
Right. And it's also like we're literally sitting on the privilege of the actions of those people.
Yeah.
Right? Like without them doing that, we wouldn't have like mainstream quote-unquote like black artists, like they wouldn't have the success they're experiencing without those sketchy means back in the day, because it was like the system was rigged.
Record Cadillac car, take 9.
I got me a Cadillac.
At one point in the movie, they show the girls and Jimmy Early, they're experiencing some success with the song called Cadillac Car. And when you see, like, there's literal appropriation happening in the movie when it suddenly, like, cuts to this very bland.
Got me.
Yeah. Yeah.
The vanilla.
Yeah, it's a very, bland. It's like, sucked all the soul out of the
song. It's not just vanilla. It's like vanilla halo top. Halo Top's actually good though. It's whatever the alternative was. I don't think it's even out anymore. The like Arctic Zero, that's what it is.
Now it's Arctic Zero.
Got me a Cadillac, Cadillac, Cadillac. Got me a Cadillac car. Oh, I've got me a Cadillac, Cadillac, Cadillac. Look at me, mister, I'm a star. Look at
when you
me,
see
mister,
moments like that, that's actually something that real African-American artists back in the day experienced. And they even reference Elvis Presley stealing Hound Dog from Big Mama Thornton, I believe is her name. But I always kind of feel like a bit weird when I hear people criticizing what needed to be done in order for artists to cross over.
Yeah.
Because, like, how can we judge? Like, maybe if we were alive back then, we might have done the same thing, too.
Well, not just that, but, like, now we're able to see how that paid off. So it's like, if they hadn't done those things, then, like, where would we be at now?
Exactly.
My next scene is right before "And I'm Telling You," and then it's "And I'm Telling You."
Oh, is it the "It's Not Over" scene? Is it that song?
Sort of, like, right in that area of the film, right before she says, when they're setting up to do the New Year's performance. There's so many, like, weird cuts, and that's the portion that I mean is it feels like you're watching a movie and fast forward.
Okay.
Like, when they have the riots going on and she walks outside, and then she's like, I don't feel well. And then, like, five minutes later, she's pregnant.
Yeah.
And then the scene where she, like, storms off and she's, like, basically saying she knows that Dina is with Curtis. And then she storms out. And then the next thing is just, like, them walking out and it's just the two of them now.
That's what's so hard about covering this movie. The pacing of it.
Yeah. I would want to say, like, there's a 30-minute span in the middle of it that's, like, everything's boom, 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 boom. And it's so rushed, it's, like, almost funny.
That's why it's also kind of hard for me to judge the narrative aspect of this movie. I haven't seen Dreamgirls, the production of it on stage, so I'm not quite sure if that's how it quite literally plays out on stage, and maybe it translates better on stage, but it is a bit jarring for them to be like just going through story so fast. Right.
That's why I wish there was more pauses for dialogue. How long is this movie?
It's 2 hours and like 5 minutes.
Okay, just kidding. I was gonna say, like, I think it's only an hour and a half, so they could have added 30 minutes of dialogue and we would have sat through it fine, but never mind. but I feel like when you're watching a Broadway musical, it's just assumed like you're going for the singing because it's live performances, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, that's what you're paying to see. Whereas in a movie, you're there for the acting and the story and the emotion and the characters. So, like, even if it's the dramatic cuts on stage, then, like, you have more tolerance for it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Because it's like you're anticipating that's what you're going to see. It's going to be something that all the storytelling is through the music. Whereas in movies, like, you don't have to do that.
Yeah.
Which brings me to my next point that I was going to cover is it was interesting seeing this after A Star Is Born, because in contrast, then their performances were pre-recorded. And it makes sense for this type of movie because it's like it's glossy and it fits it.
Mm-hmm.
But it just made me think more how I really do think it was a cool creative choice that for A Star Is Born they did everything live, because that fits that type of movie more. When you have a more glossy movie like this, then pre-record all the way. But like in A Star Is Born, that would have felt so different if they had everything pre-recorded.
And also, like, within the context of each respective movie too, like when they sing in A Star Is Born, it's within the context of like this is a performance, whereas in Dreamgirls sometimes they just like break out into song.
Yeah,
even though it's like a
diegetic, like, versus non-diegetic.
Mm-hmm. But I like this "It's Not Over" scene into "And I'm Telling You I'm Not Going," because for me, I just, like, right off the bat, I love the music of Dreamgirls, but sometimes I feel like the songs function within the film context. It more so served as like a flashy moment.
Yeah.
Versus like, we need to use this moment to really push the story forward.
Mm-hmm.
But the specific performances of "It's Not Over" and "I'm Telling You I'm Not Going" were moments where not only do we get like a great musical moment, but it also served the narrative.
Yeah, and we get to kind of take a beat and like sit with these characters for a little longer.
Right.
Whereas everything else, it's like we're moving, there's lights, there's all these montages.
Yeah, there's a lot of montages.
That's, again, I think why I get the whiplash from this movie.
The first half of the movie, lots of musical numbers, and it's fun, but you're just like, oh my God, like, what's going on with these characters emotionally?
You're in a Cadillac car, and it's driving really fast, and then you get whiplash.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Effie, Curtis was supposed to...
love me! Curtis was supposed to love me!
There you are, Effie. I've been looking all over.
I turn my back and find myself out on the line. You could have warned me, but that would have been too kind.
Specifically with this scene, though, what I liked about it in terms of, like, the narrative aspect was that this is the moment when Effie feels like everyone is turning on her. The music is so, like, percussive. It's like a jolt.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where I feel like Effie is emotionally at this point in the story. Like, suddenly these people who moments ago were telling her that we are family... now they're like turning
giving
on her
the boot.
Right, it's hard to disconnect. It's not over into and I'm telling you I'm not going, because like they literally flow from one to the other. Mm-hmm. But and I'm telling you I'm not going, like, I would say that's the iconic song from Dreamgirls. It's like when you mention Dreamgirls, you think this song.
And I am telling you I'm not going, even though
they rewrote the musical around that song for the original musical.
Oh, okay.
It became, after that song, it became more of Effie's story. Before that, it was more Dina heavy.
Oh, interesting. Oh, I didn't know that. That just goes to show that they could see the power in that moment. And that was such a star-making moment for the original Effie, Jennifer Holliday. Like, that's probably what helped her win that Tony Award. And I would say that this moment in the movie is probably what helped Jennifer Hudson win her Oscar. I mean... this is kind of apropos, but like whenever people audition for singing shows like an American Idol or X Factor or like a The Voice, as soon as you like hear the beginnings of And I'm Telling You I'm Not Going, like you know that that person selected this song because they want to prove that they can sing.
Yeah, it's like, let me show you my chops.
Right, it's such a diva star power making moment.
It's an anthem. Still going off of And I'm Telling You,
okay,
fun
yeah,
fact here. Is that Hudson was so serious about channeling Effie that she even went in to re-record the track in the middle of shooting because she grew into the character more. And it was the very last scene shot after months of shooting. At the end of the process, Hudson was far from the timid woman who auditioned. So since it was one of the last scenes, then she's like, you know what? I actually feel like I understand this character better. I get where she's coming from. I can put more emotion into this than that first recording. So like, I want to go back and redo it.
Wow.
But yeah. I thought that was cool.
Yeah.
That she, like, grew with her character.
Mm-hmm. Do you have any other scene?
That's my three.
Oh, that's your three? Okay. My third is, listen, Dina's moment. Really, Beyonce's moment.
Beyonce's And I'm Telling You.
This really is Beyonce's And I'm Telling You.
Because it's not from the original musical, right? It was made for this. So I think that it, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It was Beyonce's And I'm Telling You.
Well, like we said, this is if And I'm Telling You I'm Not Going was Effie's moment of like catharsis and liberation, this was Dina's moment of catharsis and liberation. I will say, I feel like Dina's kind of like meh.
Yeah, but she's supposed to be.
Yeah, I guess that is kind of like part of her character
arc. Yeah, because this moment is her character arc. That's what I like about this song, is Beyonce even said like it was a hard role to play at the beginning because she's more reserved. She can't get angry with the way she's singing. She can't get gritty. She can't find her soul in it.
Yeah.
And then this is the first time she really is able to basically be more like Beyonce.
Like, literally find her voice.
Yeah. And so I think it's a cool moment because it's like, man, Beyonce's been sedating herself this whole movie. Now she woke up. She's been living off that master cleanse and she just had a burger.
She finally got those donuts at the crafty table.
Everybody was eating Krispy Kremes around me.
Another aspect of, and I guess this also plays into Dina as a character, but I just never believed in Dina and Curtis's relationship. Like, I know that's like kind of like the point of it, but even, I don't know what it is about the way it is portrayed in this movie, but like, I even feel more of a connection and pull for Laurel and Jimmy's relationship than
I think in general, what we're dealing with on the chemistry level is like, there's a bunch of really big names in this, but not necessarily people that like have chemistry with each other.
Okay.
That, and again, we're flying through all of the plot points.
Yeah.
So we don't get the time for them to like build that connection.
Mm-hmm.
It's like we get a couple moments that we're supposed to just be on board with.
Right.
And that's kind of hard to do.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't feel like any of the people in this movie had chemistry, but like it would be really hard to pull it off.
And it's like, this is a long span of time too. It's like, what, 10, 15 years?
Yeah.
Like within the world of the film itself. So it's like, that's already a hard job in and of itself. And then you have the fact that you need to consider these like musical moments.
Mm-hmm.
And then also consider the fact that you're adapting this musical to the film medium. There's a lot.
There's a ticking clock and a whole lot of stuff to cover.
Yeah. And then unfortunately, like, character depth like falls to the wayside.
Yeah.
I feel like in hindsight, this is a fun movie, but in terms of the depth of the story and the characters, it's not really there because they just like have to go through these story beats so quickly. Can I also just really talk quickly about the song We Are a Family?
We are a family like a giant tree branching out toward the sky. We are a family, we are so much more than just you and I.
I just feel like that song and the way it operates in this movie, it's like, it feels like emotional manipulation, that song.
Yeah, but do you think that's intentional?
Yeah. Do you realize, like, they play this song at three pivotal moments in the movie?
Oh, really?
Yeah. So the first time they play this song is when they're trying to convince Effie to, like, just go along with the program, so to speak. And then the second time they play this song is right after Effie is booted out. And then the third time they play it is right after Jimmy is let go, when he, like, kind of goes crazy on stage. And then he later commits suicide.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of like this whiplash of, like, emotion. You
Interesting.
Know? It's like, oh, you're telling me we're a family. But are we a family?
Yeah, then
I don't think so.
Right. So then I think it was, if it was at all those key moments. Yeah, it was intentional.
Well, before we move on, Lisa, what is your favorite song in this movie?
My favorite song, I have two answers, because my favorite song versus my favorite performance.
Okay.
My favorite song is Step Into the Bad Side.
Oh, wow. And then, you're a Step Into the Bad Side stan.
Yeah. Well, I don't stan, but like
you're a fan.
I like that moment. Yeah. Favorite performance is Listen.
Okay. My favorite, I really love the music from this movie. So it's kind of like I could change on any given day. But for the moment, I will say that my favorite song in this movie is Patience.
Yeah. Oh, Patience. Little sister, patience. Little brother, patience, patience. Yeah. Take each other by the hand. Yeah, yeah. Oh,
you know, that's really what was happening to a lot of the Motown artists at the time in the 70s. They were trying to express themselves artistically because they felt, considering what was happening in America at the time, there was something worth singing about. Whereas in the previous decade, Berry Gordy was like, no, you should be doing these like palatable pop songs that can speak to white audiences. And then it was artists like Marvin Gaye and Stevie Wonder who were like, no, we want to say something with our music. So I felt like that was just a nice little nod to that. And I just think, like, Anika Noni Rose sounds so good on that song.
Do you feel like her character is a little bit of the Michelle in the situation?
I do, but then, you know that additional girl that comes in the movie, her actual name is Michelle, which I thought was really
funny. I caught that too. I got that and I was like, intentional? Yeah, I wonder if her name was Michelle in the 1981 musical.
Yeah, I don't know.
Or they're all on set one day and they're like, we need a name for the new girl. And then Beyonce's like, what about Michelle?
Well, when I was actually watching some behind the scenes footage, like, you know how they do those like quick cuts? Mm-hmm. There was a cut to Matthew with the one T sitting next to director Bill Condon looking at the screen. And I was like, ooh, remember back when Matthew Knowles managed Beyonce?
Self-reflexive.
Yeah, self-reflexive moment. But yeah. All right, well,
on to the next.
Dreamers, we'll make you happy.
Let's jump into popcorn and pop stars. So this is a segment of the show where we talk about where the particular diva was at the moment and maybe why they chose to do this movie. And in this case, we have two divas. We have Miss Beyonce and Miss Jennifer Hudson. So,
well, our first diva, she really didn't have anything to her name, and then this just shot her into stardom. You may have heard of her. Her name's Beyonce. Just kidding. So this movie happened during the B-Day era. She'd done movies before. She also did Austin Powers, The Fighting Temptation, Pink Panther, which I love Pink Panther. But so obviously Beyonce was a huge star even before this movie. Don't you think this is probably to date then her most serious movie she had done?
Yeah, I would say so. And I think Beyonce has even said in interviews too that she considers Dreamgirls to be her first movie.
Oh.
Like her first real movie that she did.
Interesting.
Even though she did Carmen, a hip hopera. That was
no
the warm up.
For Carmen.
That was a warm up.
What did you learn about yourself doing this movie?
Well, I feel like I never acted before this movie. And I did everything I could to do the best job I could. And for 6 months, I worked with an acting coach.
Mm-hmm. Now you can call yourself an actress.
Beyonce is just kind of an interesting one because I feel like a lot of our pop stars we cover, we can have a definitive, this was them before the movie, and then this is them propelled into stardom, or this is them revamping their career. But Beyonce was just out there moving and grooving, and like, she just kept doing her thing.
Right. Well, I also feel like at this point in Beyonce's career specifically, it very much mirrors Dina as a character.
Like she was finding her voice.
Well, yeah. Well, because additionally, I'm sure all of you know, Beyonce was in Destiny's Child. They released their last album called Destiny Fulfilled on November 16th, 2004. At that point, Beyonce was like, my destiny and obligation with this girl group has been fulfilled, so I will move on to solo pastures. And then that album comes out. It's the last Destiny's Child album. They tour the album from April 9th, 2005 to September 10th, 2005. And then Dreamgirls rehearsals begins around November of 2005.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like she herself as an artist was experiencing this transition of, okay, now I'm like really truly leaving the girl group and becoming my own solo artists.
A lot of the things that happened to Dina has happened to me in my life. I started out Destiny's Child,
yeah, mm-hmm,
and became a solo artist, but it's also very, very different from my life.
Yeah.
I was nervous in the beginning because I didn't want people to think I was Dina,
yeah,
because we are very, very different.
I always wonder too, like, how Beyonce specifically felt stepping into the role of Dina, considering all of the Destiny's Child girl group drama. Like,
yeah.
Did she think, like, are people going to make the connection that I'm the real life Dina? Especially in the early days of Destiny's Child, like, people got on Beyonce all the time for being this quote unquote diva. And oh my God, look at these girls. They're just like rotating them in and out.
That video, Say My Name, ended up being shot weeks later with LaToya and LaTavia nowhere in sight. And their places taken by two brand new Destiny's members, Farrah Franklin and Michelle Williams.
What was that like, though, when you heard that they'd shot a video for a song you sang on without you?
I was like, first of all, I was like, nah, you boys.
They were very, very aware
of everything before it was done.
She probably didn't think like that because her as a person didn't relate a whole lot to Dina's character.
That's true.
So even though there's a lot of parallels, and I'm sure she thought that much out, I think she looked at the character and was like, this isn't me.
In terms of why Beyoncé did the movie, oh man, okay, well... Her choreographer, Frank Gatson, longtime choreographer, I'm not quite sure. I don't think he works with her anymore, but he had been telling Beyoncé for the longest time that she was Dina from Dreamgirls. So when the opportunity came up, Beyoncé, of course, took that and she auditioned. And she auditioned in the most Beyoncé way. She auditioned in full costume with a ready choreographed routine. And actually, her screen test is on YouTube. If any of you have, like, the free time to watch it, it's interesting. It's cute. Like, you could tell Beyoncé's, like, really trying. But another reason why I also think Beyoncé did this movie, aside from people telling her that, like, oh, you're Dina, is because I really think Beyoncé thought that by doing this movie, this was going to be, like,
solidifying as a serious actress.
Yeah.
Like this was her A Star Is Born.
Right. Essentially, yeah. Like, she thought she was going to be, like, Diana Ross. Like, when Diana Ross, like, did Mahogany and Lady Sings the Blues, like, how those movies solidified Diana as, like, oh, she can act. Beyoncé probably thought Dreamgirls is going to do that for her.
Mm-hmm. And then she did The Other Woman after. Or what's that movie called?
Oh, Obsessed.
Yeah, Obsessed.
But little did Beyoncé know, another diva was gonna low-key steal her thunder.
What do you mean?
Jennifer Hudson.
Oh, but, like, I feel like she knew that much. Like, you read this, yeah, she totally knew that much.
Yeah, but I feel
she knew going into it that Effie's the star of the movie.
That's what always gets me. There's certain people who will want to play the role of Dina because, like, within the world of Dreamgirls itself, it's like, Dina is the star.
Yeah.
But then, in all actuality, when we actually look at the story of Dreamgirls,
then, like, Effie gets more screen time.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, I think some of it was... I can picture in the negotiations it being like, she's gonna play Dina, but there needs to be an added song. Like, she needs to have that moment of listen. Right. I do think she knew, like, she's not top billing.
Well, I don't know. Maybe because, like, I genuinely remember back in 2007,
mm-hmm.
people saying, oh, this is Beyoncé's moment. But then the conversation shifted to, this is now Jennifer Hudson's moment.
I get where... people would think that if they're not familiar with the story. But I think if you're literally signing on to do a movie, like, you know what you're signing up for.
Mm-hmm. That's true. We can't forget, like, Jennifer Hudson at this point, before signing on to Dreamgirls, like, she was, I mean, not to be, like, crass or mean, but she really didn't have anything aside from the fact that she was a finalist. Contestant on American Idol. Do you want to talk a little bit about J-Hud?
Yes. Okay, so as we just kind of said, then Jennifer Hudson was one of the finalists on American Idol, but she didn't make it to, like, the end. And there was actually, like, controversy, I guess, in her season, because, like, bottom three contestants were all, like, women of color or something like that.
Yeah.
And so, like, looking back, people are like, that was so wrong.
So the three bottom ladies were Jennifer Hudson, Fantasia Barrino, who ended up winning that season, and then another lady named Latoya London. And it was so dramatic because they separated the contestants into three different groups. So, like, seeing these three ladies, you would think, oh, they're safe. But then the plot twist was that those three were the bottom three. So, like, that in and of itself was a shocker.
Tonight, this is our bottom three: Fantasia, Jennifer Hudson, and Latoya London, America.
And then for Jennifer Hudson to be the person, quote unquote, like, voted off was like, oh my gosh.
They have the lowest number of votes. And that person is Jennifer Hudson. Fantasia, you are safe.
There's a really interesting article, by the way, that MTV put out. It was an interview that Jennifer Hudson had done with MTV, like, right after she had left American Idol. And there were theories, like, you know, like you were saying, like, was it racist? There was also another conspiracy theory that they thought there may have been, like, a power outage in Chicago. So that's why, like, people couldn't, like, vote for her. Yeah. So that was interesting.
But so this was her debut film performance. What a rising star that she went from American Idol to literally a nomination for Best Supporting Actress.
Yeah.
Like, that's incredible.
And then winning, too. I also think it's just, like, an interesting connection, too, because, like, her name is Jennifer, and the original Effie on Broadway was also named Jennifer.
Yeah, and it's, like, Holiday Hudson.
Yeah. It was kind of, like, meant to be.
It's a Hudson Holiday.
Yeah, it's a Hudson Holiday. Did you happen to watch when they were on Oprah?
I watched clips of it, but I didn't watch the whole thing.
What were your thoughts on their appearance on the Oprah Winfrey Show?
Today, the Oprah Winfrey Show proudly presents, for the first time, together on one stage, the star-studded cast of Dreamgirls, Jamie Foxx, Beyoncé Knowles, and Eddie Murphy.
I hope I'm not reading into it too much, but I felt like there was some type of tension there.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Not like crazy tension, yeah. But it's probably just a matter of like they'd just done all this press, but like I feel like everyone there, they didn't seem like thrilled to be there.
Mm-hmm. I felt like it was kind of like an interesting shift in like power dynamic,
because mm-hmm.
like the initial people that they bring out are Beyonce and Jamie Foxx,
uh-huh.
who like you would say at that point in the mid-2000s, like they were really on top of the game. Because Jamie Foxx had just recently won the Best Actor for Ray.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like you have this like big time actor and then you have Beyonce being Beyonce. So they start off the interview and Oprah's, you know, like playing up the movie, because that's essentially the point of them appearing on the Oprah Show, was to get that seal of approval from Oprah. But then as soon as Jennifer Hudson comes out, it's like Oprah really lobbies for Jennifer Hudson.
Yeah.
The critics are saying that she gives a breakthrough performance in Dreamgirls. But I'm telling you that Jennifer Hudson crashes through the wall in this movie. I tell you, I think it's a religious experience listening to her sing. She makes the little hairs on the back of your neck stand up.
All right, well, I think it's time for us to spill some tea.
Who is it?
Mrs. Potts, dear.
I thought you might like a spot of tea.
Time to spill the Technicolor tea.
All right.
It's like nice to have a little tea party every once in a while.
So what do you have? There's a lot of tea.
Out, yeah, I'm trying to figure out where the best starting point would be. Okay, so originally Warner Brothers, they had the rights to Dreamgirls and they agreed to co-produce with DreamWorks. However, after casting was fully completed and they did the budget for the film, this movie is very it ended up being even more expensive than this number. But it was budgeted at $73 million and Warner Brothers backed out of the production.
They like, were like, oh no.
Yeah.
We're not going to step into the bad side.
Yeah. So then DreamWorks teamed up with Paramount. But then over the course of the filming of the movie, then Viacom is the parent company. And then they bought out. Did they buy out Paramount or DreamWorks? Hold on.
I think they bought out DreamWorks.
Mm-hmm.
And then DreamWorks and Paramount became, they were under the same umbrella.
Yeah. So Paramount's parent company is Viacom. And then they purchased DreamWorks. So there was that crossover. So then they were essentially all part of the same company.
Mm-hmm.
The drama arose come award season, because then there was like some confusion over whether the Paramount people should be credited to get the awards or the DreamWorks people.
Mm. There's additional Oscar drama in that, do you know, well, the song ended up not winning anyway, but do you know that Beyonce got snubbed for an Oscar nomination?
For the song?
Mm-hmm.
Like she wasn't nominated?
She wasn't nominated.
Oh.
Yeah, so there's an article from MTV in 2007, and I'll link it in the show notes, but the Academy did not recognize Beyonce as a primary songwriter, even though she's credited as one of the four songwriters for Listen.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
Mm-hmm.
I got it. Okay.
So just in case you guys didn't know, just because the person is singing the song doesn't mean that they're going to get the Oscar for Best Original Song. It's going to go to the songwriters. And in 2005, the Academy made a rule change that capped the number of songwriters who can win an Oscar to three people. So the songwriters for Listen were Henry Krieger, Scott Cutler, Ann Previn, and Beyonce. And I'm going to quote the article here. They say, the executive committee met in December, determined that of the four songwriters listed, Knowles contributed the least. And as such, her name will not be included on Oscar ballots. And then an additional thing that I have here under Oscars drama is Eddie Murphy actually stormed out of the theater when he lost for Best Supporting Actor. During the awards season, Eddie Murphy and Jennifer Hudson were really the front runners in their category. And Eddie Murphy had won the Golden Globe and the SAG Award for Best Supporting Actor leading up to the Oscars, which is, you know, usually points to a good sign that more than likely you're going to win the Best Supporting Actor. But when it came to Oscar night, he lost the Best Supporting Actor to Alan Arkin for Little Miss Sunshine.
Oh, that doesn't surprise me, though, because that was like Little Miss Sunshine's year.
Right. There were a lot of good movies, I feel like, that
year. Yeah, I was going to say, I think that was a tough year.
Mm-hmm. Well, either way, Eddie felt away, and he stormed out right when he lost. And I think the saddest part is that he didn't get to see the Dreamgirls medley performance, which is equally amazing. Highly suggest you guys watch it on YouTube.
He's like, I don't need to see it. I was in the movie.
Yeah.
I'll continue with the awards drama.
Yeah.
So another interesting thing that happened was DreamWorks and Paramount, when they started their huge For Your Consideration campaign, which is what you do when you're wanting to be nominated for an Oscar, then the studio that put out the movie will start a whole campaign that's kind of putting forth who they think should win the award or be considered for the award.
Mm-hmm.
So it raised several eyebrows by demoting Jennifer Hudson to consideration for Best Supporting Actress and presenting Beyoncé for consideration as Best Actress, as opposed to having them both be mm-hmm. considered for Best Actress. And in contrast, then with the Broadway production, both the actresses that played Effie and Dina were both nominated for the leading actress category.
Yeah.
And then Effie's character took the role.
Right.
Or took the win. You would assume that she would be the one, the shoo-in, that would be considered for Best Actress. And then Dina, because she has more of a supporting role, would be Best Supporting. So I can only imagine how Jennifer Hudson felt about that.
Another interesting parallel to the movie.
Right. Both Jennifer Hudson and Beyoncé took drastic measures to change their body for this movie. So Beyoncé famously went on the Master Cleanse. We've all heard the story. She wanted to lose 20 pounds so that she looked like the younger, because this movie takes place over a huge course of time. So we could see the physical transition of her being like a young girl to growing into a woman.
I did a fast Master Cleanser for 14 days.
Yeah.
And that's it was like all liquid.
Pepper, blah, blah, blah.
Yes. Yeah. And then vegetables worked out. It was difficult. Everybody was eating Krispy Kremes around me. I was grouchy.
Yeah.
But I did it and I lost the weight.
They didn't ask you to lose. You just lost on your own?
No, I wanted to.
Whereas Jennifer Hudson had to gain 20 pounds for her character. Beyoncé had this to say. She's like, I knew the character that I played wasn't the star. I'm already a star. I already have 9 Grammys. Everyone knows I can sing. I wish I could have gained 20 pounds and played Effie. Which... okay, poor girl was only having like lemon and cayenne pepper, so maybe she was feeling a little grumpy.
Damn. Wow. Well, I guess the thing I could add for physical transformations as well is, this isn't as dramatic, but Anika Noni Rose has said that she had to wear, I think, 6-inch heels in order to fit into the same frame as Beyoncé and Jennifer Hudson, because she's like, aww, only 5'2". Yeah. So I thought that was cute. She tells that story on Oprah. I just love Anika Noni Rose.
I'm 5'2". Miss Jennifer is 5'9". Beyoncé is 5'6". So in order for me to be seen in the picture with the two of them, I had on some heels that were at least 4 inches, and in the finale, 5 inches.
Wow.
So that you could see me next to the ladies. I was ready to cut my feet off and give them away.
Oh, I understand that. I understand that.
That's hilarious. So one of the girls lost 20 pounds, one of the girls gained 20 pounds, and one of the girls wore painful shoes.
Yeah.
There's a whole lot of pain for this movie.
And Jennifer Hudson apparently got like lip injections.
Oh, yeah. I made a note of that. And that's so interesting to me, because that was like lip injections before lip injections were like a thing.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, let's get to Tinseltown Showdown. This is a segment where we talk about potential actresses, actors who may have also been up for the role in the movie we're talking about.
Let's start with Dina.
All right.
So obviously Dina was played by Beyoncé, but some contenders were Whitney Houston, Lauryn Hill, Jasmine Guy, and Whitney wanted to sing both Dina and Effie's song.
When I read that, I was just like, of course she did. Like, that just makes sense. That makes so much sense.
It sounds like something a little kid would do, like, I want both, please.
Well, I think that also just goes to show that she knew that obviously playing the Dina role is like the vanity role, right? But she also knows that the meaty role, the meaty song, is with Effie. There's like that self-awareness there that it's just really funny. And I'm like, of course Whitney would do that.
Mm-hmm.
I was reading somewhere too that when Whitney was brought up to potentially be in the movie, this is either like late 80s or early 90s. And I wonder if she got the script before she got the bodyguard.
Oh, interesting.
I really don't know, but it is interesting to think of.
So Curtis, played by Jamie Foxx, they also considered Denzel Washington, Will Smith, and Terrence Howard.
And I heard Denzel Washington said no to it because he can't sing.
Yeah, I thought that was funny. He was like, I can't sing.
Well, I love at least that he's self-aware enough to be like, yeah, I can't do that, so bye. You know?
Yeah.
I'd rather an actor be self-aware enough to know where their limitations are versus like look like a fool.
Yeah, and just take the role.
Mm-hmm.
For the role of Effie, then some of the considerations were Raven Simone.
Which is crazy, because that's like circa Kim Possible, That's So Raven.
Yeah, also, can you just picture like Beyonce and Raven Simone in a movie together? It'd be like...
Oh, man.
It'd be like the Cheetah Girls, but like, then Beyonce's just there like, I'm not a Cheetah Girl.
Right, yeah.
Raven shows up to set like Cheetah Girls, Cheetah Sisters, and she's like, no. Kelly Price, Fantasia, which like, that was odd.
So... who really won, Fantasia, winner of American Idol, or Jennifer Hudson, best supporting actress?
Good point. Good point. And then for Effie's brother, CeCe White, I really like these considerations.
Yeah.
Usher, Omarion, and Andre 3000. And Andre 3000's reason for not wanting to do it is that he didn't want to be typecasted, which I thought that was funny because he had done... what did he do before that? That was musical.
Yeah, it was musical period piece.
What's the... it'll come to me because when I was in dance, we did a whole production to this.
Oh, really?
Idlewild.
Oh, Idlewild.
Yes.
I could see either of those guys.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm glad with the person they ended up with. I think his name is Keith Robinson.
Mm-hmm.
He has a really nice voice.
He just seems like a lovable nice guy. Yeah.
Yeah. I guess another interesting note I could add to Jamie Foxx ultimately getting the role of Curtis was he originally turned down the role, which I thought was interesting.
Yeah, because he was now a Academy Award winner, he wanted to make more money.
Yeah.
And so he originally like turned it down because he wanted 25 or not 25. I think it was like 15. Mm-hmm. Yeah, 15 million. And I thought it was funny how he talks about that on the Oprah special, because he was kind of like, it's okay, because years from now, like, this will be my legacy. Like, it's not about the money. And it's like, no one said it was about the money, but it's like, no one, Jamie Foxx, it's not about the money.
It's like when you question someone who's guilty of a crime, like, you think they're potentially guilty of a crime, but then when they're saying like, oh no, I'm not guilty, I didn't do XYZ, but then XYZ is a point that only the people involved in the crime
know about.
Yeah. Yeah. It's kind of like, wait, what?
No way. I want to see the receipts.
All right, so let's move on to Show Me the Receipts. Just talking about some quick stats of the movie.
So we mentioned earlier that this was a very expensive movie. The first projected number for the budget was $73 million. It actually went up to $75 million, but some reports even say $80 million, which is a lot of money. So without getting too much into crunching the numbers, it made its money back, which is a success.
Yeah.
So it has a 78% fresh score on Rotten Tomatoes. That's 78% fresh for critics and a 71% for audience. So it is generally viewed as a fresh film.
I'll talk a little bit about awards. So, like we were saying, this movie had a really interesting awards show journey. And all of that campaigning eventually led them to 5 Golden Globe nominations. They won 3 of them. Jennifer Hudson won for Best Supporting Actress in a Musical or Comedy. Eddie Murphy won for Best Supporting Actor in a Musical Comedy. And then Dreamgirls, the movie, also won Best Motion Picture for Musical or Comedy. And Beyonce was nominated for Best Actress. And she also got the nomination credit, at least at the Golden Globe Awards, for Listen for Best Original Song. Dreamgirls was nominated for 8 Oscar noms, and it was the most nominations that year for a film. However, they were not nominated for Best Film or Director or any of the lead acting categories, which is a bit of an anomaly. They won two Oscars. Jennifer Hudson winning for Best Supporting Actress was a moment, and then they won for Sound Mixing. And the other nominations included Eddie Murphy for Best Supporting Actor, and we all know that he didn't really take to losing that well. They also were nominated for Art Direction and Costume Design, and then they got three nominations for Best Song. Do you know what songs they are?
Listen, and I am telling you, nope.
Mm-mm. Because the Academy actually has a rule where if you're adapting a musical, you can't nominate the songs.
So it all has to be original.
All original songs.
Oh, then what's the other two?
The other two are Love You, I Do,
mm-hmm.
and Patience.
Oh.
You guys should watch the medley performance that they do. It's on YouTube, but I was watching it and it's so funny because when Beyonce comes in, she literally comes in on the last part of the high note in Love You, I Do. Like Jennifer starts it and then Beyonce finishes the high note, which is like really funny to me. 'Cause you'll always be true. Kind of sucks because they ultimately lost Best Original Song to Melissa Etheridge's I Need to Wake Up from an Inconvenient Truth that year.
Oh, that was such a funny year in awards. Oh my gosh.
Mm-hmm.
But also it's just it's a sign of the times. Like I was at Dreamgirls Bedazzling My Sidekick, and I also had Al Gore's book. It was Al Gore, right? No.
Yeah. That was the Al Gore documentary.
Yeah. I had the Inconvenient Truth book and I watched like all the coverage and stuff they did on MTV. Like they did this whole special with an Inconvenient
right.
Truth. And I was like, I'm going to save the world with my sidekick. I can send important emails now about global warming.
Yeah.
Watch me save the world.
13-year-old Lisa, philanthropist. What do you think the impact is of Dreamgirls, the movie musical?
It served justice for Jennifer Hudson.
Mm-hmm. This was the movie that really launched her into stardom.
Yeah.
Do you have anything else to add for impact?
I think that's my takeaway. Mm. That I would want to say that it solidified Beyonce as a serious actress, but I don't think it did that.
I would say it put Beyonce into the consciousness of being
a more serious performer.
Yeah. But I don't think
I wouldn't say actress.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I agree. For impact for me, I have here that it's worth noting the importance of seeing an all African-American cast. There really aren't that many white people in the movie,
mm-hmm.
and let alone white people with actual lines. So to see like an all African-American cast in a movie that is really about the history of African-American music during like the 60s and 70s, I thought it was a really great moment.
And that everyone involved is like such a powerhouse.
Yeah, like this, the level
like
of
it's the cream of the cream,
right? It's like the level of star power in this movie. Like I love that they put their best foot forward for this moment. I mean, additional impact I have is that I love that this experience gave us B-Day.
9 4 8 1 B-Day. It was so many things built up. And the crazy thing is the record is really aggressive and I'm very happy. I'm very content in my life. But Dina felt like she was trapped and she was married and she was in this relationship for so long. And it was all the things I wanted to say while I was doing the movie, all the things I wanted the character to say. So I'm speaking for every woman that's kind of been in a relationship for a long time. And it's supposed to empower women to have the extra boost to say all the things that they feel in their hearts. So it's really a strong album and it really makes women feel like they're powerful and it kind of makes you want to get your power back.
Because like, you know, like you've been saying, like Beyonce really didn't relate too much to Dina, even though there were some similarities with their career trajectories and whatnot. But following her time making Dreamgirls, Beyonce then recorded B-Day, and this movie was like another stepping stone into Beyonce essentially being this like powerhouse woman, this woman who has built her career on the platform of owning who she is and being independent and all of that. So love that for her.
Ooh, the last thing I'll say on Impact is it really did great things for the Master Cleanse, which I think no one should do that. But you cannot talk about the Master Cleanse without talking about Dreamgirls.
Right.
And also, it's like really not safe, girls. Don't do it.
Yeah, don't do it. That doesn't like sound healthy. You know what I will say, though? I feel like we can all learn a diva lesson here. Sometimes the path you think your career should go on in order to like get to a certain point isn't necessarily the path you think it's going to be.
What do you mean?
Well, because like Beyonce, yes, she knew that Effie is the bigger role, but I really feel like she thought that Dreamgirls was going to open more doors for her to be like a serious actress. But like after this movie, Beyonce, yeah, she did other movies, but she really didn't have Beyonce is now like a serious actress kind of moment.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, that's okay. Like Beyonce is clearly perfectly fine. I mean, she got to
Nala.
Yeah, she got to legend and diva status in her own way, and I feel like that's an interesting lesson we could take from this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like don't try too hard to like map it all out. Just like,
yeah. And you know what? Dreamgirls might not have been the Beyonce movie, but The Lion King is. So, so it's all okay.
Coming soon to theaters.
Okay, so now we're going to go into coming attractions. We give you a little taste of the movie we're covering next week. So we'll see if you can get it from this clue.
Don't forget to follow us on Instagram because that's where we will be revealing what movie we're going to be covering next. So enjoy.
You know every single number.
Which one do you want to see?
Wagon wheel what to see?
Do you have anything else you want to say before we go?
I think that's it.
All right.
Remember, divas.
So the thing is, a diva has to be good at what she does.